This is Nursing in America. Each week, we speak with incredible nurses from all over the world who have taken the leap to start a new life in the United States. If you're thinking about doing the same, then this is the place you'll find all the insider knowledge and inspirational success stories to realize your own American dream.
Hi, everybody, and welcome. We are so excited today for season 2, episode 2 of the Lafora Talk Show. And we have Michael joining us. Hi, Michael. Welcome.
Good morning.
And also Miss Jean. Hi, Miss Jean. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Miss Tanya. I'm good.
Nice to see you. And we're also going to have Rommel, who's going to be joining us in a minute. So we are really excited to get started. My name is Tanya Friedman, and I'm the Chief Operating Officer of Kinetics USA. And every month, we bring you the Lafora Talk Show. And we have two new guests, Michael, who's going to be sharing his journey with us, and Rommel, who's going to be joining us shortly. And then, of course, Miss Jean, the famous Miss Jean, who is very well known on Lafora. And shout out to the Lafora admin team for giving us this opportunity. Because I think it's really important for nurses to help other nurses that are coming to the U.S. So before we get started, the purpose of the Lafora Talk Show is really just that, nurses helping other nurses, those that are in the U.S. already, sharing their journey and their experience. Ah, and there we have Rommel joining us. Hi, Rommel.
Hi.
Welcome. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
So we're just talking about why we're doing the Lafora Talk Show. For those of you who are in the U.S. already, you will know that there is a lot of advice and a lot of tips and pointers that you want to share with those that have not yet arrived here. And that's really what this is all about. So we're really excited to hear Rommel and Michael's journey. And of course, Miss Jean is going to be chiming in all the time as well. The Lafora Talk Show is an hour, so please stay on because we're going to be sharing Rommel's journey, we're going to be sharing Michael's journey, and we're going to be talking about a lot of things about their journey of getting to the U.S., about what it was like in the hospitals when they first arrived, what, you know, cool technology in the U.S. They're going to be talking about what it's like to come on your own or what it's like to bring a family. They're going to be talking about the states where they are currently located. Many people don't realize how different the different states are. So keep on, stay on for the full hour and watch all of that information. And they're also going to be talking about COVID, what the situation is like right now in the states where they are located. So we've got a lot to look forward to. The one thing that we have asked the guests is not to share anything specific about the specific hospitals that they're working or the organizations they're working with, as well as the agencies. This is neutral. This is not, talking about any specific hospital or agency or anything like that. Okay. So with that said, let's get started. Okay. So Rommel and Michael, if you want to maybe start off and just each of you tell us a little bit about your background, where you're from in the Philippines and your background as a nurse, and maybe tell us a little bit up to the part where you before you got to the U.S., what was your journey? Who would like to go first?
I can go.
Okay. Go, Rommel.
Hi, good evening, good morning, good afternoon, everyone, wherever you are in the world today. I previously worked in a pharmaceutical company before moving into the U.S. My course actually in college is Bachelor's in Science in Physical Therapy, but having worked in a pharmaceutical company, I have medical doctor friends who invited me to take up nursing. The main reason being that I really wanted to go to the U.S. As a physical therapist, but at that time I graduated in 2001. At that time, the physical therapist from the Philippines is actually barred. There was a big hoopla in one of the results of the certification board in the Philippines, and we are banned to go to the U.S. All of the clinics, we were told in the Philippines that all of the clinics and hospitals in the U.S. Has this memo in their board saying they're not accepting Filipino physical therapists. So the only option for me to go to the U.S. is to take up another science course that is in demand in the U.S., which is nursing. And fortunately, at that time, where my medical doctor friends invited me to take up nursing, they were offering a fast-track nursing course for physical therapies, dentists, OTs, and doctors for a two-year, one summer fast-track course. And then you can take the exam as an RN in the Philippines, and eventually you can take the boards in the US. So that's what I did. So I took the opportunity. I took up the fast-track course nursing, and that was history. So, but luckily for me as well, my doctor friends really pursued me in doing the school thing, because I was working back then in a pharmaceutical company. So I gave it my all. On top of me working in a pharmaceutical company, I have to finish everything. So we do classes at night. I don't have weekends because I was at school on weekends. And I have, of course, to spend hours for my clinicals. So, and then eventually, after we graduated from that fast-track course, I have to take up all of the exams. So that was my actual background before me moving to the U.S.
Wow. Well, you definitely had your goal in mind, Rommel. You knew what you were wanting to do. You wanted to come to the U.S. and you were going to do it no matter what.
True.
I know a lot of nurses who are watching feel the same, because, you know, a lot of nurses took up nursing for that exact reason. Michael, tell us a little bit about your background.
My name is Michael Ray. I graduated nursing in 2008 in Cagayan de Oro, but I originally hail from Taguluan, Misamis Oriental, and taking nursing as a course and as a profession is something that's unplanned. I never expected to land in this career, because when I was young, I never really entertained the thought of being in a course that's medically related. I was always poised by my family to take up law and become a lawyer. And in fact, I was already in my third year in preparatory law school when I decided to shift to nursing. And that was quite a disappointment, I know, for my dad.
What made you shift?
My mom was in the States when I was in first year, and she was telling me a lot of good things about nurses, how nurses are working well and spending the best of their lives in their profession here in the U.S. at that time. And I was still closed-minded at that time until a documentary in one of the channels in the Philippines had featured the lives of the nurses in the States. And that's when I started contemplating about, you know, moving to, you know, shifting to nursing. And probably because the preparatory law school that I had was not really like an exciting course. I got so bored. So I tried nursing, and here I am. I'm not a nurse.
And I'm sure your dad is very proud of you now.
Yeah, I graduated. My graduation day in college was his birthday.
Oh, wow. So that's a great birthday gift.
Yes. So even though he was no longer, he already passed away that time. But I think I still gave him a good birthday gift.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure he was smiling down on you. So I see we have a ton of people that are watching today. Please put into the chat what your name is and where you're watching from, and if you have any questions for Michael and Rommel. Michael and Rommel, so you kind of came to nursing from different backgrounds, but tell us about your journey just before you landed in the US, because I know you both have very different experiences. So I think it's interesting for people to hear, and very different to you, Miss Jean, also, because I know your story. Tell us about your experience of coming to the US.
Go ahead.
Okay, go first. Okay. It's difficult for me. I was working back then, as I've mentioned, in a pharmaceutical company. So I'm working in a corporate world. And then I have to go back to clinicals. And somehow being a physical therapist helped me as well. For some of them, you know, memory works. Whatever knowledge I had, I brought in from physical therapy helped me. But what was difficult for me was the clinicals, because it's totally different. We don't do bedside as a physical therapy. We only do clinics, right? So the adjustment was really, I should say, petrifying for me. I was so scared going into clinics and doing my duties. The best part, and I think what helped me, as I've mentioned a while back, was having doctor friends as my classmates. There were 111 of us in that class, but on my group, because we were grouped like into 10, and we do the rounds, we do all the clinicals in group by groups. So there was 8, I think, if not 10 in our group. I was the only physical therapy graduate / RN, and the 9 or the 8 of them are medical doctors. So it's easier for them to do bedside. But what helped me is their knowledge, because they were teaching me, basically 9 people were teaching me with my clinicals on top of the clinical instructors that I had. Mm-hmm. But the adjustment really was very, very difficult for me, because I was still working in the morning, and then they would my clinical instructor would be calling me at night to do all those clinical duties. So at night, I would be very, very, I should say, I wasn't really in the right mindset, because my mind is at work, and then I would be doing clinicals. So the adjustment was difficult. I have to give 120% of my energy. I wasn't sleeping well. And then on top of these clinical duties that I had, we were already prepping for the national exams. And we're actually reviewing for the CGF and NES. So but the school that I had for RN was really, really good, because they were they were like 100 steps ahead of us. Like, we were doing the clinicals, but on weekends we are reviewing already for the national boards. And on Mondays, there are people coming in from the national universities, like the biggest universities in Manila, and they were reviewing us already for CGFNS and for the NCLEX type of exam. So I think that helped us, because they really wanted the 111 of us in the class to pass and to really get good scores in the national exams, because we are like the test class. They need to make sure that we were in that top, on the top portion, or on the top percentile of the national average in terms of the national boards, for them to show to the nursing board locally in the Philippines that this is a good program. So it was difficult for me, because I was working and doing the clinicals and reviewing all at the same time. But again, what made my life easier is because I have doctor friends on my group helping me. But it was really interesting. While all of this thing is happening, what's in my mind really is, yeah, I should be doing this, because I wanted to go to the U.S. in New York particularly. Mm-hmm. I think what helped me to have that determination as well is that I have a partner in New York at that time who was also pushing me. pushing me to finish it. And I think that helped me as well. So I had a good objective. I have good determination. I have good support group, being my group mates are all doctors and they're helping me. I had a good school because they wanted to, you know, to show the Philippine board that they have a good program. So it was really like I fitted in to the program and everything that's happening helped.
Wow, Rommel. So that was a lot of work, a lot of sacrifices, but with the determination you were and the support, you were able to get there, which is, which is what everybody wants.
We'll be back with the conversation in just a second. There's a wonderful opportunity for you. Kinetics USA is currently recruiting registered nurses from all over the world to work in healthcare facilities here in the USA. If you are interested, please apply at kineticsusa.com/application. That's kineticsusa.com/application. On with the show.
Michael, what was your journey like?
I would like to apologize in advance that this is not going to be a brief answer, as my story is a little bit unusual and unorthodox compared to other nurses who came here. Well, of course, Rommel has his story as well. So I've graduated nursing in 2008 and then took and passed NCLEX in 2010 and spent around like 5 years in the Philippines, working mainly in review centers, conducting review classes for the Philippine Nurse Licensure Exam and NCLEX. And I also work as a staff nurse in one of the hospitals in Cagayan de Oro. And because of my utmost desire to really land a good career in the U.S., I placed my resume in online job posting sites. And finally, in 2014, I signed a contract with one of the agencies for EB3. And you know how EB3 works. It takes years, even a decade for some to wait. So in 2015, I got another opportunity. Another agency offered me to work in Northern Mariana Islands in Saipan, which is a U.S. territory. It was a work visa. So I asked the permission of that petitioner, EB3, if I can go and grab this opportunity. And they said, yes, it's not going to be a conflict of interest. So I did. I did fly to Saipan in January of 2016 without knowing that that's going to be the start of a quite wobbly nursing career of mine. I did not expect that we would arrive there without a salary. And, you know, processing papers, especially if you're coming from Mindanao, going back and forth to Manila, you would really incur, you know, debts, you know, because you have to pay for plane tickets and hotel stays. So my concern that time is how I'm going to pay my credit card in the Philippines. And I always do pay on time. So it took around 2 months for those salary irregularities. But what really transpired or happened in Northern Mariana that made me think of a different path was that at that time, the entire island was struggling to accommodate all foreign worker visas, to renew their visas, that mine was not renewed. My application did not meet the deadline as mandated by USCIS, that I had to be repatriated back home 5 months after my arrival in Saipan. And I haven't recovered yet financially at that time, but luckily I was able to go back in August, 2 months after, in Saipan to work again, but this time already in their hospital. And they gave me a good reassurance that, hey, even though you applied to us part-time, we will be able to process your papers and readjust you to make you full-time working with us And so I did. In fact, when the consul interviewed me at the U.S. Embassy, she saw the contract that it was just part-time, and she was raising her eyebrows. I gave her the explanation as what was explained to me by the human resources at that hospital. But so she did approve my visa, only to find out when I arrived in Saipan, 3 months after my arrival, I was told by their HR that they did apologize, that they're having the same problem, that they have to send, I'm going to be one of the first batches of nurses or workers in that hospital that had to be sent home and with the same problem. And another thing, my part-time was not readjusted to full-time. So in those months that I was working there, I was not earning enough because I was only working part-time. And so another agency went to Saipan to campaign for EB2. And I think a lot of you guys know about EB2. And so nurses there got enticed about EB2, but it's not free. You have to pay for the processing, and it's a lot. An immigration lawyer here in the U.S. offered me his services for a much cheaper rate. And so some friends expressed their support on me, and I finally made the decision to give it a try and let go of the EB3, which I must admit, it wasn't a good decision. But I took the risk because I wasn't prepared to go back and again home and backtrack. I didn't have an assurance again if I could find a job in the Philippines or what. And so my EB2 got approved initially. I was able to fly to Texas and move in a home health, working in a home health in Texas. When I arrived there in May of 2017, I was happy because there were many Filipinos working. I felt there was, you know, I mean, there is that sense of belongingness. Then a few months after, I started hearing horrifying stories. These nurses were well-experienced nurses and were very stable working in Saudi Arabia. And they moved to the U.S. I heard that their entry was tourist. And it's fine. But the thing is, they were asked to work, start to work, even if their documents were not yet completed. Some of them did start working without social security number. So for those of you who are still in the Philippines, you will soon know how important and how essential it is for somebody to have an SSN in order for him to work legally here in the U.S. And another thing I heard that there were some of them are saying that they are declared to receive this amount of as their salary, but in real life, they only had this much. And they were struggling because they have family, trying to sustain their needs here in the U.S. But I didn't want to meddle. I don't want to intrude to their concerns. I just had to focus on my own, thinking I was okay. And then 8 months after my arrival in the U.S., I mean, in Texas at that time, around January of 2018, I was wondering why there was no update yet with my EB2. So, and in fact, I had to resort asking the help of a congressman or senator in Texas at that time. And February of 2018, two guys knocked at my apartment's door. And they introduced themselves as special agents, investigators from the Criminal Fraud Investigation Department. Okay, so I let them in. And they informed me that this lawyer that is processing my papers and this home health agency that I was working with were under investigations for some irregularities, misrepresentations in some of the documents that these Filipino nurses that they're processing with. So I just gave them information of what I know and on my own, on my end too. And they invited me to be a witness to appear in court. And I was sent in a city where I had to appear in court, all government expense paid. And only to find out that I was not allowed to testify because at that time I was still working in that home health. And the lawyer from the prosecution panel told me that it's going to be a conflict of interest because they're from the prosecution panel and I was still working with these people that they're investigating with. And sadly, I was told by these agents that, you know what, Mike, your green card is still within reach. You can still have it. But we advise you, you have to look for another petitioner. And you know what? In those times, my family was not aware in the Philippines what I was going through. It was very devastating because I jumped to EB2, I gave up EB3, and now it was like a dead end. And it even took me like driving to as far as McAllen, which is like a border between Texas, between US and Mexico, just to find another employer. And here in the US, human resources in hospitals do not seem to have much knowledge in how to process papers for foreign workers. They don't know the dirty job. It has always been the agencies who have the expertise to do that. And it's always like money talks. So I got so tired. I was getting broke and I already have a car. I had to pay all these bills here in the US and I already resigned from my job. I spent sleepless nights until I just decided to give up and go home in the Philippines in May of 2018. And at that time, when my family, especially my mom is 79 years old already right now. It's so sad. It broke my heart seeing my mom disappointed because I think it's always our goal to give them, to be a feather in their cap. But at that time, I was disappointed. I was disappointed. I did regret that. Why did I have to jump to EB2? But I knew in my mind I didn't do anything wrong. But it just so happened that I fell into these wrong people. 2 months in the Philippines, jobless. I was contemplating and trying to refigure my career. I didn't know nobody, like almost my friends had no idea that I was already in the Philippines because they were thinking I was having a good life in the US. And God moves in mysterious ways. And at that time, I did try to talk to my EB3 petitioner, but I understood they were already disappointed. No interest to continue processing my papers. But in August of 2018, I received an email from them expressing their interest to pursue my petition. And their legal department did talk to me and had to understand what happened to me in the US. And they gladly told me, you're fine. We can continue processing your EB3. And I had my interview in the US embassy, more than determined, more than eager to make things right in March 12 of 2019. And of course, the consul saw that I went to Saipan, moved to the US, and was like, okay. And accidentally, I was not able to update my DS-260. And she was like, these were not reflected in your DS-260, but I'm going to give you some chance to correct them after this interview. So I was not approved right away. I got 221G. So for those of you who are in the Philippines who are still in 221G, do not lose hope. That was March 12. My birthday is March 23. When I went out in from the U.S. Embassy, I knew, like, I think there's going to be a miracle that will happen before my birthday. So checking my status in SEAC, like the website, it was administrative processing for March 12. And then March 22 was my last hope, because it was Friday, the last working day before my birthday, which happened to be on a Saturday that year. I did check my SEAC status on Friday, March 22 in the afternoon. And yes, the status was updated from administrative processing to visa issued. And as what they say in the Philippines, ma, ihanda ang lechon. That's what I told my mom to celebrate my birthday. And I got back here in the US in May of 2019. And the following month, I received something in my mail. I just knew what was the content of that mail. But because of the very devastating experience that I had to went through, I couldn't hold the envelope. I was sweating really bad. I was having this anxiety. But when I finally opened that it was my green card, it was indeed tears of joy. And it was actually a reminder that there is hope if you just have faith in God. So now I'm here. I'm having a good time with my career here in the United States as a psychiatric nurse.
Michael, I know Robert shared the hardships that he experienced, but your journey and your experience is just, it's heartbreaking. I mean, the devastation, the feeling of hopelessness, like it's never going to happen, the determination to try and try and try. I mean, I think where is it? Hayes was saying, kudos to you, Michael, for your perseverance and patience. God is good, really. And I really want to thank Ms. Jean for bringing Michael's story to the LaFora talk show. Jean, do you want to share why you wanted Michael to share his story? Because, you know, different guests bring different backgrounds. Rommel has a different experience, but I think Michael bringing in his experience is really important to share. Why did you want Michael to share?
Yeah, I think last week Michael told me that he has a different story. He has a, like, so there is something that was like a very extraordinary one. So I told him, just take a video and just send it to me. And then later on, I realized that would take time. So I told him, oh, okay, call me. I was at work that time, and he told me everything. So, yeah, I know there is something that's going on for the past years. I even posted one of those. There was one post, and there are a lot of nurses who has complained about that there is that something is going on, not really a good one. So I realized that the story of Michael has to be told in LaFora, because there are still a lot of nurses who are still coming here, and they might be trapped like what happened to Michael. So I did agree. And I guess he also told you that story before this time.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
And I really want to just commend Michael for having the courage and the bravery to share his story, because, you know, I think it was, I can actually cry, because I think it was just, you know, it's a story of hope and miracle at the end, but the roller coaster and the emotion, I think, you know, we can all just feel that as you were going through it, Michael. And you know, I'm so grateful to Ms. Jean for introducing us, because I think it really is a cautionary tale for everybody to hear your story. As Rommel knows, the experience is hard enough if you haven't experienced those additional burdens. But, you know, to have gone through what you go through, if we can just help educate one nurse out there, you know, to be careful of, you know, who you trust and make sure that it's a reputable company. And, you know, please, you know, watch the Kinetics YouTube page. You will see why EB2 can be a very difficult visa for nurses. So, you know, to educate yourself about the process. I really just, you know, commend you, Michael, for sharing your story and for sharing the hope, because you're here today. you're here today to tell the tale, and you are a beacon of hope for so many people. As you say, so many people get that 221G, not even experiencing what you've experienced, but just knowing that it can come right. So never give up, and really kudos to you.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of Nursing in America. Part 2 will be available next week, so make sure you hit the follow button and come back to join us then. If you enjoyed the episode, please help us and leave a review. Kinetics USA is currently recruiting registered nurses internationally. We offer direct hire, which means healthcare facilities will directly sponsor and hire you to work here in the USA. If you're interested, please apply at kineticsusa.com/application. That's kineticsusa.com/application. You can find the link in the show notes.